Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stories last week about the private school voucher program in Racine receiving more student applications than the 250 student first year cap on enrollment would allow got us thinking about the expansion of voucher schools in the state of Wisconsin. They will be expanded to suburban Milwaukee and Racine, eventually to Green Bay. It's been an area that's had people on very different sides for quite some time now, and we thought it would be a good idea to look at the expansion of the program and whether or not it has been good for students, good for parents, good for education in the state of Wisconsin. We have people from different perspectives joining us this hour of the show, to say nothing of your calls that will be coming in, and I'm sure you'll have your own perspectives on voucher schools. Two guests with us. Larry Miller is a board member for the Milwaukee Public Schools, adjunct professor at Marquette College of Education. He has taught 18 years at Custer High School and also at the W.E.B. Du Bois High School. His two sons are graduates of Milwaukee Public Schools, and he is an editor of Rethinking Schools. Larry, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Kathleen, for having me.
Our great pleasure. Also joining us in our Milwaukee studios, Terry Brown. Terry is former president from 2002 until just this year of St. Anthony's School on the south side of Milwaukee, a private school that participates in the Milwaukee Choice Program. And Terry, thank you very much for being with us in our studios. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Let's start with this news about the voucher program in Racine, which has more student applications than there are spaces available. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think it's because the parents are looking for options. So I was down in Racine for an open house with parents and also a day where we helped parents complete their applications with the schools. And it was amazing the stories we heard from parents and how happy they were to be able to have a choice as to where their children went. There are other options within Racine. There are some charter schools, but some of those are have long waiting lists, and the parents were just happy to be able to have a choice as to where their children go to school.
Happy because they're unhappy with public education in Racine?
Well, I think just unhappy with whatever the particular school they were in. You know, you have a lot of interest, especially in the sixth and seventh grade level. So parents that were happy potentially with their Racine Unified grade school were not looking forward to their children going to the middle school. So all over the board, but people that just were looking for a school that fit their own philosophy and needs.
Larry, why do you think it's the case?
Well, I agree with Terry that people are looking for options, and the real question is, will these options satisfy their needs? Public education has come under huge duress and a lot of criticism, and there's significant moves to improve public education. But what I see as the voucher program is part of an overreach that is trying to diminish and pretty much destroy public education, divert funds, put students in schools where there's less accountability, and the list goes on. It's going to cause huge problems for the public as time goes on.
Terry, do you think that it's a move to destroy public education?
No, I think we need to stop thinking so much about systems and individual schools, and I think we need to put the parents and the students in charge of where they decide to go to school. And we all pay tax dollars for education, and I think it's right that parents can use their own tax dollars to send their children to the school of their choice.
And what makes you think that it will destroy public education, Larry?
Well, I'm not saying it's going to destroy it. I'm saying it's an attempt to destroy it. To me, it's very conscious. If you look at the berating of public education by the leaders of choice, it has historically been to demean the public education. It's been historically meant to take the funding from public education. And it's actually, in their arguments here in the state of Wisconsin, it's become a real moving target over what is the results. If you look at the headlines of the Milwaukee Journal on March 29th of this year. It says very clearly that Choice Schools not outperforming MPS in the city of Milwaukee. It actually should have said MPS is outperforming Choice Schools. So the results after 20 years of operation have shown that it is not a strong alternative to putting money, resources, and our effort into the public of public education.
Your response to that, Terry?
Well, my response would be, if that were the case, I don't understand why every year the Choice program continues to grow and the parents choosing the Milwaukee public schools continues to shrink. So there's something going on there that parents find to be exceptional. And it has to do with academics, and it has to do also with culture, the behavior expectations in the school. And it's a whole mix of things that parents use to determine which school their children go to. And I think it's important for everyone to remember that the money does not belong to Milwaukee Public Schools. It belongs to the public at whole. And St. Anthony or any of the schools participating in the Choice Program and the new schools in Racine, they're serving the public interest by educating the children, educating them as good citizens and teaching them virtue and all the beautiful things that we learn in literature, math, science. So we're serving the public interest, and we can do it at less cost. And ultimately, we're looking at the greatest indicator of success in the schools is high school graduation rates. And the schools participating in the Choice Program significantly outperform the local district in high school graduation rates.
There's been a change in the voucher program. It's been around in Milwaukee, of course, for a long, long time. The idea initially was to have students who are lower income students be able to have the choice that higher income families have. That philosophy has been changed somewhat in the state of Wisconsin. What do both of you think of that? And let's start with you on this, Terry. Do you think this program should be available to everybody, no matter what your income level?
Yes, absolutely. So I think that it really shouldn't be looked at as an anti-poverty program. It should be looked at as a school reform program, much like the charter school movement. So what we want to do is make sure that we have great schools available, whether they are the traditional public school, whether they are charter schools, or whether they are the private schools. And we want to do what we can to move the academic achievement, the behavioral achievement of the kids in Milwaukee and now in Racine and hopefully other places as we go forward. And we want to do that for as many people as possible. And certainly you look at, let's say the amount of the level of the voucher went up to about 300% of poverty. So even at 300% of poverty, only 10% of those parents in the absence of the voucher program or the Choice program would have been able to afford private school education for themselves or be able to move out of the city into a district that they felt had better traditional public schools.
Larry.
Well, when you say you don't want it to be an anti-poverty program, really what you're saying is the Tea Party. What I hear Terry saying is the Tea Party view of that it's an entitlement, that public education, Title I, all of these things are an entitlement, and that they're going to just help the poor. When in fact, what I'm hearing is that we want to transfer these funds to a Milton Friedman approach of vouchers for everybody, and put that money out there for everybody. If you look at other countries where this has actually been done, if you take, for example, Chile, what it's done is it's lent to stratification and segregation by class throughout the country of Chile, who's experienced this for a long time. But let me get back to the high school graduation. It's very interesting that Terry raises it on the issue of high school graduation, that voucher schools highly outperform the main data that's used is presented by the University of Arkansas, and they looked at 801 students. Okay, of those 801 students, the high graduation rate was one just among one cohort that they studied, where they said there was 94% of the students, but that was only 318 of the 801 students. If you add the second cohort, where people that they tracked, if you add both of those cohorts, it brings the graduation rate down to 76.6% graduation rate, much closer to MPS, which is at 70%. And if you, and the remaining students, 161 others, they don't know what the outcome was there. If you added those in, I'll bet it would be very close to a graduation rate similar to Milwaukee Public Schools. Here's the problem. On the issue of the facts, and in this day and age, facts don't seem to really matter in a lot of debates that go on. You have a graduation rate that's similar to Milwaukee Public Schools. You have performance on standardized tests that is not as good as Milwaukee Public Schools. They keep changing their arguments. They move away from one argument as we disprove it and move to another argument. And it's pretty much reduced to the level of, well, it's cheaper. It's cheaper. Then if you look at how that's presented, they say that Milwaukee Public Schools per student gets $15,000 per student, and they get $6,442 per student. Well, is that true? I just 2 weeks ago signed off as a school board member $17 million that goes directly to voucher in private schools in the city of Milwaukee through Title I. And that's just one entitlement, just one program that goes through Milwaukee Public Schools because we're the LEA. They're including that in the $15,000 per student for MPS, but they're not including that in the amount that goes to the voucher students. It's a smoke and mirror type argument to pose it as it's this extreme cost savings.
Terry.
Well, I mean, you could reverse your argument, Larry, and you could say, if you're not able to outperform the private schools, why should you have a monopoly on education in Milwaukee? So the fact of the matter is it all is going to come down to whether we think it is best as a community for the parents to make the decision as to where their children go to school, or whether it's best for a bureaucracy to assign kids to a specific attendance school or let the parents choose to go to some sort of magnet school. But should a bureaucracy choose that, or does the parent know best which school is best for their child? For many reasons. And, you know, I would just say that when we're talking about high school graduation rates, or I'm not using the study that is sponsored by the legislature through the University of Arkansas. I was using Dr. Warren's numbers out of Minnesota, who says an 18% higher graduation rate out of the private schools than out of the traditional public schools in Milwaukee.
But he refers to the Arkansas study in what he presents and uses that as a backup. So the source of it really has to be the Arkansas study, and once that gets deconstructed, it's slippery. It's very slippery.
Let me ask both of you, where you see a declining point, you particularly, Terry, for public schools, because most of us in this room are probably products and listeners. If you're of a certain age, you went to public schools. Most
sure.
people did. And they were okay. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a record in the state of Wisconsin as having strong public schools. At what point, why did we start looking at other kinds of schooling as perhaps being better? What was the failing? What was the downfall in your mind, Terry, of public schools in the state?
I'm guessing that a couple things. Maybe the lack of rigor in the curriculum, because there was all sorts of experimenting that went on. And we all, I'm 46, so I went through that in the public schools and the private schools, quite frankly. So there was confusion over what to teach, and then there was also kind of a lessening of just the civility in schools and what was expected in terms of behavior, and that's not particular to traditional public school or charter or private, but I think the private schools were able to hang on to that civility portion and the rigor of the curriculum a little bit longer than we saw in some of the public schools. But The point here is that if you look at why did the voucher school program start across the nation, it's because they saw essentially in the especially in the Catholic urban schools, you saw just, huge gains in terms of academic achievement for those children and behavior and expectations as to what they would do after their education was over in the 12th grade. And you saw that happening at really insignificant amounts of dollars. So I think the fact that we had mission-based schools, so people who were in the city running schools just for the sole purpose of trying to get kids ahead, was very helpful in making the private religious schools successful. And I don't think that's exclusive to kids in poverty, but I think that was the first point at which people said, okay, we've tried everything we can as a society, more money, better buildings, everything we could, and more and more and more of it, because we want the best for our kids. And at some point people said, no matter how much we've given you, no matter what building we built, it just isn't changing any outcomes. We need to try something different.
Larry, what do you think?
So what we're saying is let's spend less money, but let's not perform as well, and let's have comparable graduation rates. That's not acceptable. We need a first-class education system, and that means the whole community has to come together to create that. We can look at countries where it does exist, Finland and Denmark, just country after country where we do see that existing. But this issue of civility, well, who's not being civil? Our kids? Is it our kids aren't being civil? The success around this issue of behavior at private schools is because they can exclude who they want and they can include who they want. They can segregate as much as they want. They're not subject to the scrutiny, to the accountability that public schools are. And you can see that going on with the voucher program here. 1.6% of voucher students are special ed. 20% of MPS students are special ed. That is there's a complaint with the Department of Justice right now that is clearly states that this is segregation, a new form of segregation, an example of how privatizing public education does not serve all students. And the issue is, are we going to serve all students, whoever their parents are?
Well, on the special needs issue, I think because I was a school administrator, I can understand why you're seeing numbers that are different. Number one is that there is absolutely no financial incentive for a private school to label a child special needs. And so when we would have kids transfer in from the district schools and eventually you receive the student folder with the IEP in there, oftentimes it was behavioral codes that we didn't feel we needed to label anyone as a special needs child until we saw ourselves whether we could help with the child's behavior. You have to remember as well that it's the courts and the Department of Education have laid down rulings that don't allow parents who transfer to a private school to keep all their rights in terms of special education. That's not a decision of the private schools. It's a decision of the public school system. In other words, if my daughter was at St. Anthony and was receiving, you know, speech therapy through the local Allen Field, the local school, they came over and helped her with her speech. These things happen. It's normal in a private school. But if she had a speech problem and she had a cognitive problem, she would not be eligible for services through the district, because if you have two different types of problems, you either have to transfer back into the district or you voluntarily give up any types of services. So it's different in the public schools, because in the public schools, you have to come up with an individual education plan. And in the private schools, you only have a service plan provided by the district, because the federal funds come in for all the kids in Milwaukee administered by the district. They're not administered ever by the private school. So the long and the short of it is, if you have a child and you with special needs, you move them from the district to a private school, by law, you surrender your rights to receiving an individual education plan.
Let's go to phone calls. We have a ton of people who would like to speak to the issue. We're talking about voucher schools. They have expanded. They are in Racine now and in Milwaukee as well. And will be eventually in Green Bay in the state of Wisconsin. How are they faring? Why is it that a lot of parents have wanted to send their children to voucher schools in Racine, but there haven't been enough spaces available? We're looking at how effective they are, how where the problems may be here, how it may change the whole face of education. We have two guests with us, Terry Brown, former president of St. Anthony's School on the south side of Milwaukee. It's a private school that participates in the choice program. Larry Miller on the school board of Milwaukee Public Schools. He taught in the school system for over 18 years, and his two sons are graduates of Milwaukee Public Schools. He's an editor of Rethinking Schools. Our phone number, keep it in your mind because our lines are all busy right now, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to the first of your many phone calls now. Jane in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
Thank you for this program.
Sure.
First, well, I have two comments, and Larry already addressed one of my comments about the choice schools being able to pick and choose who they want to attend, and those other students then have to fall back on public education. Public education is equipped to deal with the special education students, and I can't see any parent with a child with severe needs going to a private school. This, my second point is the separation of church and state. As a taxpayer, I really resent my tax dollars going to pay for religious education. I am a product of religious education. My parents paid tuition to allow me to go to a public or private school rather than a public school. And I do not believe the tax dollars should be used to pay for religious education in these voucher schools.
All right, Jane, thanks for your call. Terry, that's to you.
Well, I don't know. Do you have any neighbors that are religious and they pay taxes and they have to have the ability to decide which school is best for their children? And when you're talking about education, that includes a lot of things. And I just don't believe, and I don't think most of the people, even in the city of Milwaukee, in fact, school choice outpolls among Democrats than Republicans in the city of Milwaukee. I think parents are looking for choice. And you have to remember that within the private school program, the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program, we can't pick and choose what kids come to the school. We have to accept everyone that came. At St. Anthony, when I started there, we had 400. When I left, we had 1,450. We weren't picking and choosing. And if you were to take the voucher schools, the schools participating in the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program, we would be the highest poverty district in the state with the lowest level of funding in the state. So we're doing great things for kids and families with very little money and achieving just great success.
Larry.
Well, but not as successful as Milwaukee Public Schools if you look at the data. Yes, you're the highest poverty district in the state. Is that always going to be true? You know, this issue of who gets in and who doesn't get in, you have to take all students. Every year when I was teaching at Custer High School, there would be a group of young African-American males that would come to me, to my class at the beginning of second semester. And I'd always do an incoming survey. Where'd you come from? Half of them would come from Ethan Allen, you know, the boys' prison. The other half would come from Mesmer. I said, Mesmer? Why are you not at Mesmer? They were asked to leave. I said, for what reason? It was either behavior or bad grades. And it happened all 4 years I was there, every mid-semester. They would kick kids out for low performance. We can't do that in Milwaukee Public Schools. I was at Coggle 2 years ago. Young boy had just left St. Anthony's, Terry's school. Why did you leave St. Anthony's? They said I was bad. And they said I would not speak in English. This was ELL student, English language learning student. We can't do that in Milwaukee Public Schools. People leave our schools after Third Friday, but it's because they choose to. When people leave voucher schools after Third Friday, they are forced out. They are being kicked out of school. But, of course, the voucher schools get to keep the money till the end of the semester.
Terry.
Well, I find that interesting, the story about St. Anthony, because, of course, 99% of the kids in our school were Latinos. But I just don't – I think that you have movement back and forth both ways. At St. Anthony, we just did not have a very high expulsion rate. We worked with kids. We worked with their families to make sure they were achieving success. We worked with them on their behavior. There's plenty of schools in Milwaukee that you can't get into unless you have – great testing. You know, you have charter schools, you have specialty schools, and we do have high expectations in the schools, both for academics and for behavior. I don't think the problem is as large as we're hearing from Larry, but I think maybe people would support the ability at MPS too for schools to say, hey, if you don't want to learn and if you don't want to behave, then maybe you need to find another school.
I think we should teach all kids, and we should be dedicated to teaching all kids. There's a teacher who teaches at St. Anthony's this year told me if administration hears her speaking Spanish, she gets punished. Now, I don't know what punishment is at St. Anthony's, but it's English only, Spanish not allowed. So you may have a majority Latino Spanish-speaking students, but the issue is no Spanish is supposed to be used or especially used in education. As far as going back and forth, after Third Friday, there is motion back and forth. But when you leave MPS, you leave on choice. When you leave a voucher school, you're being asked to leave a voucher school.
If I could just respond. So St. Anthony takes a different approach, which is supported by even the federal government. The federal government doesn't require bilingual education anymore. So we use an immersion program where we work with the kids to develop their skills in English, and we work on that all day long, no matter what class they're in. We've found that the little K-4 kids by Christmas are speaking English because we're working hard with them to learn the language. And we do have pull-out programs for kids that are in the higher grades, so we work with them specifically to learn English, and we've had great success. Now, the flip side of this is that when they go to our high school at St. Anthony, they're required to take Spanish for Spanish speakers so that we can work with them on their grammar, their writing, their punctuation. But at the grade school level, we made a choice that we would concentrate on mastering English. And remember, no one has been assigned to St. Anthony School. Everybody walked through the door of their own volition, and nobody has been assigned. So this is just parents being able to decide, you know what, I want this type of instruction for my child, even though it's not the home language. And then they could go over to Allen Field, or they could go to another school in the neighborhood if they chose to have the bilingual approach. That's the beauty of this whole system in Milwaukee, is parents are not told how their children will learn. They get to go around and shop and find out which school is best to fit their needs and the needs of their children.
Let's go next to Saeed in Green Bay. Hi, Saeed.
Yes, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. It's a very important subject. About 3 decades ago, the National Commission on Excellence in Education put out a report called The Nation at Risk and warned us about the educational disaster that was inherent in our system. Since then, in inflation-adjusted dollars, we have doubled our expenditure on education, and our performance is dismal. We rank 48th in industrialized nation in overall education. Our graduation rates are dismal. And a recent study reported that 76% of our high school graduates are not adequately prepared for academic challenge of a first-year college course. This dismal performance comes about because we have a state-controlled monopoly over education, which is then by virtue of a union that is very strong and controls any attempts at reform. We have ended up where we are. We have to ask ourselves, why is it that we need voucher schools? The reason we need voucher schools is because Larry Miller is part of an entrenched power structure that resists any sort of reform. this entrenched power structure by killing educational opportunity for our most disadvantaged kids is blocking the road to upward mobility, resulting in greater and greater disparity between the haves and have-nots. This is the principal challenge that faces us. What I'm talking about is a power structure that pays $100 million a year to teachers that are too incompetent to send into the classroom in New York, in the cold rooms of New York, where $100 million a year is being spent to pay teachers that can't be fired but they're too incompetent to teach. Yet my daughter, with a bachelor's degree from Stanford and two master's degrees from Columbia University, can't find a starting educational job. This entrenched power structure needs to be removed. This is killing America.
Larry, that one's yours.
Well, Saeed, you should send your daughter to Milwaukee. She can start at $24,000 a year with a high insurance copay at one of the voucher schools here. I believe that if we're going to have a strong education system in this country, it's not to private. The way to do it is not to privatize and turn it over to privateers. It's to the way to do it is as in countries where it's been done well, is have high qualified teachers, pay them their value, their worth, train them, put money into the schools so that we have the resources that are needed, and make that equitable, we can move significantly. The reforms that are going on right now are showing significant success. Now, people can scream and yell about the lack of success. That's why I ran for the school board, because of the lack of success, because of the criticisms I've had of how public education is being run. I ran for the board for that reason. The issue is, are we going to come together as a community and solve these problems, or are we just going to turn it over to this new agenda, this new Tea Party agenda that says all things government is bad, that wants to end anything that will bring together communities to solve the problems that have to be solved.
And let's talk a little bit more about teachers. And let me just say that I was trained many years ago as a teacher and taught for some time. I think that there is some validity to this not being able to, for whatever reason, that we just don't value the profession or what it is. I worry about the future of the profession, be it in voucher schools, be it in public schools, that teachers, if you ask me, are underpaid for the work they do, that it's a very, very demanding job that shows a lack of respect for the profession among people who live in this country, to have them paid what they're paid, be they in voucher schools or in public schools for that matter. Do both of you worry about that? Do you think that you're not going to be able to attract the best and the brightest, which, if we're going to have a top-notch education system, it all starts in a classroom?
It does. I would just say that I think some of the reforms that we've seen this year in terms of the ability of school districts to reward high-performing teachers, to have the flexibility to set up merit pay programs, we can find ways to raise the income level of really high-performing teachers. Once we abandon things like scales, when we start paying for merit and achievement, I think that's where we're going to see the professionalization of the teaching community. To be quite frank, when you have a union situation, people don't consider you professionals, because you're not moving up the ladder based on merit. You're moving up the ladder based on seniority and things that have nothing to do with the academic outcomes of the children. So I think we can solve some of the pay issues, some of the benefit issues, once the school districts and charter schools and private schools start rewarding teachers for the results.
Larry.
I see what the Walker agenda has done is lend to the poverty, to the discredit of teachers, and it's disgraceful. Not only has he cut money for schools, we're the highest cuts in the country, $635 per student on the average, compared to all other states. We're the highest cut funding this past year. But for teachers, he's making it much more difficult to actually to get into the profession. If you start in Milwaukee Public Schools, and starting pay is $35,700, if you start and you have a couple kids, after the 5.8% and all the things that the governor wants teachers to do, teachers, if they have a couple kids, you're pretty close to being eligible for food stamps. And I know for a fact that if you start at a voucher school at $24,000 and have a child or two, you do apply for food stamps. So what do? Send out applications with food stamp applications when we want teachers to come. It's demeaning to the profession. It's a poverty-ization of the profession, and it's an outrage.
Well, I think we have such low starting salaries because we over-reward people that have been in the district for years and years and years and years without necessarily performing any better than the new teacher. Now, of course, that doesn't apply to everyone, but we can all imagine that type of a situation. Now, at St. Anthony, for $64.42 per year, we've been flat funded for 10 years now. We were able to pay for full health insurance for our teachers. We were able to have a merit pay program for the teachers. We didn't start them at 24. I think we're starting them at about 30 now. But the teachers were able to make up to $8,000 a year in merit pay based on the reading and math gains that the children made. So we were able to compete in the market for teachers because we had variable pay, because the union never required us to pay for people's health insurance. We did it as an individual entity. We put together a package that we thought would attract high-qualified teachers, and then we put them to the test by seeing how well they could do. And part of their pay was based on how well they did with reading and math scores.
Let's go back to phone calls. Saeed, thanks very much for the call. We go next to Karen in Milwaukee. Hi, Karen.
Hi, I wanted to, I appreciate you taking my call and wanted to go back to some of the disability issues because I'm real concerned about this. And I say this as someone who has advocated in this area and also been an MPS Milwaukee Public Schools parent for 16 years and proud of it. When you spoke earlier, Terry said that the voucher schools, that the law doesn't require voucher schools to serve children with disabilities. It may not require special education services, but it does require that they comply with Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act and make accommodations for those children. Clearly the discrepancy, 1.6% of the voucher children being children with disabilities and 20% of MPS. There's something going on there. Second, nothing in federal law says voucher schools can't serve children with disabilities. It is a choice that's being made. And whatever the reason is, what it is leading to is segregation of children with disabilities in one system, and that's the public system. That's not equal education. And if we're going to have equality, we need to have equality all around. Third, I am sitting here with the Department of Public Instruction test score data from the exact same test that the voucher children and the Milwaukee Public Schools children and other children in Wisconsin took last year. And I think this is really important because it is not that the voucher schools are performing about as well as MPS. If you look at choice non-disabled children and MPS low income, which is the comparison, non-disabled children, in reading, MPS is performing. Choice schools are 55.8% proficient, and 64.3% of low-income MPS students are proficient. In math, it's a 15 percentage point gap. And by the way, the MPS low-income students with disabilities also outperform the choice students. So I think we have to be real that the choice students are selecting students they want to serve. MPS is educating everyone who comes through their door because they have to by law. I think that there's a real concern about who's being educated and who's being selected out and who is being excluded from the system. It's separate and it's not equal.
Thank you, Karen. Terry.
Well, I would say that this 1.6, 1.7% number for the number of kids in the system is not accurate. So what that is that's the number of kids that are actually receiving services from MPS. Remember, the monies that the federal government provide for taking care of kids with special needs are meant for all the children in Milwaukee, but none of that may flow to the private school. So that is administered for the private, parentally placed private school children by the district. If you look at what in the longitudinal study that's taking place on the choice program in Milwaukee, you'll see that parents identify their kids as special needs. Parents of the children in the voucher program say that about 8%, 9% of the kids in the program are special needs. In other words, they're self-identifying their own children at about 8 or 9%. That's consistent with what the National Catholic Education Association sees in Catholic schools throughout the country, about 8 or 9%. So I think what you're looking at is an underestimation of the amount of special needs kids in the private schools, and I think you're overestimating in the public schools the number of kids with special needs because there's financial incentives to identify the children as such.
Larry.
Well, here's where I have some really strong disagreement with Terry, but also with the Arkansas. You have John Witte, who did the research with the Arkansas group, claims that there's incentive. I mean, he lost some real credibility when he said publicly in an op-ed in the Journal Sentinel that we have an incentive to classify students as special ed. Last year, we spent $42.2 million to meet the special ed requirements out of our general budget. Approximately 56%, only 56% of special ed is funded state and federally. We're mandated to make up the rest of that money from our general budget. That's not an incentive. We have to raise class sizes, eliminate music programs, eliminate gym, eliminate art, eliminate all the things that make schooling successful because of the mandated finance that we have to put in and cannot spend one penny. When we put money in special ed, whether it comes from the federal government or from our general budget, not one penny can be spent for anything other than special ed. Nothing.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about the voucher program this hour. And welcoming your phone calls, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to an email, this one from Maureen in Madison. I do not agree with school vouchers. The program takes money from the public schools and gives it to private, sometimes for-profit schools, sometimes religious schools, which do not have the same accountability as public schools. These schools don't have to take children with behavioral problems or mental handicaps. The public schools have to educate every child, and don't even get me started on spending public money on religious schools. Terry?
Well, we have the ultimate accountability in the choice program because every parent that comes to us comes voluntarily, and so we have to satisfy the parents and the kids in order to keep our school open and running, and we have to make tough decisions. Sometimes that means a longer school day. So, and we did all these things with our teachers who are very professional at St. Anthony. We did this all voluntarily or with votes. They decided voluntarily to extend the day to 8 hours. So our kids are in instruction for 8 hours a day. They voted in a merit pay program. So when teachers are left to their own devices, they will do what's best for the kids and they will choose some innovative things to do to try to increase the outcomes of the students. In the choice program, we have to take every child, and we want to take every child that applies to our school. We were happy to have them, and we would go out and ask parents if they'd like to have their kids in our school. So we wanted everybody to come, and because we thought, and I think every school in the program thinks, that they can do a great job for the kids. And no one is excluded, and everyone is welcome.
What about this accountability issue, Larry?
Well, there's so much that doesn't have to be presented. I mean, we argued with the leadership of voucher movement for years that they should have the same accountability that we have. I mean, if they're going to take public dollars, they should be should have the same accountability, the same. Present the same data. It should be apples to apples, not some other thing. And they fought it for years. Finally, it was put in last year. And then we got to look at the data last year. okay? And all of a sudden, the argument changes. It's no longer that. But you see that Susan Mitchell and some of the other leaders of this movement have said, well, we want to end that. We want to end public disclosure of the WKCE testing because it's a false test. Well, we've been judged. Now, we've closed schools based on the WKCE testing, but they don't want to be judged on it. So it's an argument that gets very slippery, I feel, from their side, because as soon as you disprove something, they move to something else.
Well, the problem is that if you look at what the market is dictating, that parents continue year after year after year, 1,500 per year, ad infinitum here, are leaving the district and going to the schools in the parental choice program. So that's the ultimate accountability. The choice program is growing and the district is shrinking. So something isn't right, and it isn't just test scores, and it isn't, I don't know what it is, but that's for the district to figure out and each school to figure out in the choice program. We also have lots of families that leave through open enrollment. Milwaukee, Racine, Green Bay, Madison are the districts that most suffer from open enrollment. Now, no one seems to complain about public school choice when it's open enrollment, but when it includes the private school, there seems to be a problem. But the fact of the matter is that Larry and the board have their work cut out for them to try to figure out what it is they need to do to keep parents voluntarily in their schools and not require them to be there through the shutdown of the voucher program or stalling independent charters or whatever the case might be. Those days are over. Parents want a choice, and you have to figure out how to get the parents in your schools voluntarily and not be assigned to your schools.
Scott in Green Bay is next. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. I guess my comment is probably for everybody. And the problem that I see, that I wanted to just elaborate on what Saeed said, is he expressed some great hard data, some numbers, and they were just glossed over. I mean, Kathleen, the first thing you talked about is we need to pay teachers more, which I'm not saying we don't, but the Organization for Economic Cooperative Development, an international organization, fairly progressive, states that there's only one school, one country that spends more on primary education than the United States, and there's only three countries that spend more on secondary education than the United States. We spent a ton of money, but the typical response for those who are really entrenched, who really have this great affection for public schools, is we need to spend more money. We need to spend more money. We need to spend more money. And nobody really wants to respond to that. I mean, Saeed's numbers just got glossed over. It didn't matter the hard facts that he stated. It was, well, public education just needs more money.
Larry.
I'm not asking for more money. I'm asking not to have money taken away from us. In Wisconsin, we're the highest in reduction of per student dollars. We're third if you look at the percent. You want us to? The public wants us to do more with less. Now, so the solution to that is to privatize. Now we're looking at the data, apples to apples, and the results is not as good as what we do in public education. That is not a solution. The solution is to come together as a community and solve the problems of public education, not to privatize it and hand it over to anybody that can come up with some kind of a scheme or plan for creating a school.
Thanks, Scott, for the call. We're going to try and get to a few more of these calls. Eileen in Madison, hi.
Hi. I know we're almost out of time. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And this question has been asked twice before, and neither guest answered it. I would like a clear explanation about why it seems to me it's illegal. The voucher system is illegal because the separation of church and state, there is no way that public money should be handed over to fund private schools. And since we're out of time, I'm going to hang up, but I'd please clearly address the question.
All right, Eileen.
Thank you.
Terry.
Well, that's been the money never goes directly to the school. It goes to the parent, and then the parent. Nobody complained about the GI Bill when kids went to Marquette or they went to St. Norbert or they went to Concordia Lutheran. They're great schools. We want every bit. We have the best university system in the world because it's open to everybody, it's competitive, and we need to do the same thing down at the lower levels of our education system. And the courts, both in the U.S. Supreme Court and the Wisconsin Supreme Court, have found the programs that allow religious schools into private school voucher programs as constitutional.
Larry?
In this day and age, the court system has said that it's legal, both at the state Supreme Court level, and it's been also tested at the national level. That is something for the future for us to discuss on this discussion of church and state. I think it's problematic, and I think it does cross the line on this issue.
And on that note, we have tons of phone calls, and they'll have to remain there because we are out of time. Thank you both very much for being with us. It was a spirited hour, as I thought it might be.
It was great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Larry Miller, board member for Milwaukee Public Schools, adjunct professor at Marquette University, and also he taught high school for 18 years at Custer High School, and his children are products of MPS. He's the editor of Rethinking Schools. Terry Brown, for many years, from 2002 to 2011, was president of St. Anthony's School on the south side of Milwaukee, private school that participates in the Milwaukee Choice Program. And thanks to both of our guests for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We're with you again tomorrow, and I think we're going to be talking about the labor movement for the first hour. To tell you the truth, I don't know, but that'll make it interesting, so be sure and listen. Thanks for listening.